Thank you, Cadison. It is good to be with all of you this morning. It's been about 6 years now since I was able to attend this church regularly before I left to attend seminary. But when I got here this morning, habit took over and I went straight to the name tag kiosk, and my name tag is still there. When I was growing up, every year around Memorial Day, our Unitarian Universalist congregation would host Bring a Friend Sunday. During my teenage years, a large part of the appeal was that this day celebrated the last day of church before we let out for the summer. There was no worship service per se, except perhaps in the Emersonian sense. The entire morning consisted of an outdoor potluck picnic. It was a joyful kind of day with plenty of food and an open invitation to enjoy the company. And so on Bring a Friend Sunday, I brought friends. We would sit in the grass, and sometimes my friends would ask, "So what is it that you believe at this church?" And I would laugh with pride and I would say, "Well, at my church, you can believe whatever you want." "Whatever you want?" they would ask. "Yes," I'd say, "whatever you want." But then sometimes my friends, in an attempt to define our church's boundaries, would start listing history's villains, asking me, "Well, would you let them into your church?" And this would flummox my poor teenage brain. In those days, my religion was something that I needed to defend when living in a conservative society. And so I couldn't bear to admit, I couldn't explore the possibility that maybe, just maybe, my church wasn't a church where I could believe whatever I wanted, that Unitarian Universalism was a religion, like all the others, that has boundaries around what is acceptable, and that our faith has expectations of its members. This month, you are exploring the question of what it means to be a people of tradition. What is our Unitarian Universalist tradition? Who are we? And that's what I want to explore with you this morning. Unitarian Universalism is a religion with big tent theology. You can approach this faith from any direction, any faith history, and find a place to enter where you and your curiosity are welcome. Some of us were born inside this big tent, but many of you found your way here from somewhere else. In this big tent, all four sides are rolled up with a gracious canopy offering shelter to the traveler. And once the traveler has entered, they will find a place to rest, water to refresh them, food to nourish them, and good company to welcome them home. With the four sides rolled up, the traveler can still look out, still see the landscape they journeyed across to arrive here, and also see the places from which other people came, wandering through deserts and deep forests, across prairies and around wide oceans. Perhaps there were mountain pinnacles, and maybe they came through a valley of shadow. Inside this tent, you can still see it all. And our big tent theology encourages that kind of exploration. We love playing with possibility on our individual journeys as we seek truth and meaning, drawing from personal experience and the wisdom of world religions. But that sure sounds a whole lot like you can believe whatever you want. So I would ask, how far out does the canopy of our tent extend? Are there any solid edges staking out the boundary of our faith? When we delve into our history, some lines begin to emerge. If we look back to our Universalist roots, we see a group of people whose hearts rebelled against the dominant Calvinist narrative of the salvation of the few and the damnation of the many. The Universalists couldn't accept that a loving God would condemn God's children to hell, and so they went out into the highways and byways, preaching not hell, but hope and courage. God's love, they said, was for everyone. All souls would enter the gates of heaven. Ever since then, through all the evolutions of our theology, we focus not on the afterlife, but on this life. Not on the next world, but on this world. As Peter Mayer wrote, "I remember feeling sad that miracles don't happen still, But now I can't keep track, because everything's a miracle. So the challenging thing becomes not to look for miracles, but finding where there isn't one. While we see the world's problems, our message is still one of hope, because we believe that together we can heal the world, cherishing life in all its forms. And so one side of our tent is defined. We are life-affirming. We may have different ideas about what that looks like, but ultimately we are united in focusing on life over death, in choosing to remain open to the sacred, to see the possibility that everything's a miracle, that everything is holy now. With this boundary guiding us to affirm life, we can then turn to our Unitarian heritage. You might be familiar with that irascible genius of the 1500s, Michael Servetus. He went toe-to-toe with John Calvin in a theological showdown of provocative letter writing and false identities. As one of our proto-Unitarian ancestors, he grappled with the Bible, publishing his conclusions under such titles as On the Errors of the Trinity. Needless to say, this didn't make him popular as the Inquisition swept across Europe. But even when it cost him his life, Michael Servetus would not recant his beliefs. He had arrived at them through struggle and hardship, and his theological integrity would not allow for such a betrayal. Across the span of the past 500 years, we can see that our Unitarian history is full of intellectuals whose curiosity drove them to seek truth and meaning, even and perhaps especially when their explorations flew in the face of social acceptability. We see examples of this throughout our history, from the transcendentalists who sought the divine outside of church walls, to the humanists who dared to proclaim that God was not necessary for a person to live a life of meaning and relationship. And so the second side of our tent is defined. We are truth seekers. The truths we arrive at will be different, and even our own truth may evolve over time. Indeed, we hope it will. We are not a religion that provides the answers. And so as life-affirming truth seekers, our members carry a vast diversity of beliefs and practices, suspicions and resistances. Looking at our two theological histories, this has always been the case to a certain extent. The Universalists used to argue over whether God might still make the really bad people go to hell, at least for a little while, until they learned their lesson, like some kind of cosmic timeout, before they were eventually allowed back into heaven. But others argued emphatically that hell did not even exist and all people went straight to heaven. And the Unitarians had to deal with their own evolution straight out of the Christian fold, influenced so strongly by those transcendentalists and humanists. And so both traditions had their theological struggles, and the creation of the Unitarian Universalist Association was not perfectly smooth. It was a serious negotiation to figure out how two denominations, with much in common but still with significant differences, could find their way forward as a single entity. The solution is one we still struggle to live into, but upon which the cohesion of our faith depends. It is foundational and imperative that we promise, we covenant, to affirm and promote acceptance of one another. In order for us to worship under one roof together, to open our hearts and serve the world as members of a single faith, it is imperative that we truly accept that the person next to us may not believe the same truths we do, may not understand this world the same way, may not even see Unitarian Universalism the same way. The third side of our tent is also one of our greatest challenges. We are accepting of differences. Sometimes this acceptance begins as tolerance, and that's okay, as long as we keep seeking and affirming our way toward true acceptance. In order for our faith to work, in order for Unitarian Universalism's big tent to stay up, we need to not feel threatened by those who don't agree with us and with those with whom we have trouble finding common ground. This is why we celebrate the Flower Communion. As Matthew shared, it is a tradition that goes back to 1923 when Norbert Chapek needed a ritual that would bind the people together in all their diversity. Just as no two flowers are alike, so are no two people alike. In the words of Mary Oliver, "I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy, and as singular." This annual service becomes a symbol of community. By exchanging flowers, we show our willingness to walk together as we affirm life and seek truth, disregarding all that might divide us. Each person takes home a flower that had been brought by someone else, thus symbolizing our shared celebration of community, which is essential to a free people of a free religion. It is essential because as we practice our faith, as we seek and affirm and accept, our tent will begin to fill with so many people, and we will greet so many diverse travelers, offer such hospitality that we may start to feel the need to expand our tent out to incorporate that fourth wall. With so many people all gathered together heart to heart, we will begin to understand that not all people have the same opportunities. Through chance of birth or chance of life, we see when we live a life of faith that there is great imbalance in the world. And so our fourth wall becomes evident. We become a justice-seeking people. Our heritage has examples of this in every part of our history, from the Radical Reformation to the founding of our nation, from abolitionism to the Civil Rights Movement, from women's rights to LGBT rights. All of these movements, in all of them, the leaders at the helm professed that their justice commitments were driven by the power of their faith. It is only from a foundation of powerful faith that Julia Ward Howe could write in the aftermath of the Civil War. She writes, "Again have the sacred questions of international justice been committed to the fatal mediation of military weapons. But despite the assumptions of physical force, the mother has a sacred and commanding word to say to the sons who owe their life to her suffering. That word shall now be heard and answered to as never before. Arise then, women of this day. Arise all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be that of fire or of tears. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking of carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead, and let them then solemnly take counsel with each other as the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, and each bearing after her own time the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God." Our faith, when grounded in an expansive theology, demands that we become a justice-seeking people. Unitarian Universalism is not a religion for the faint of heart. It offers a challenge to think, to seek, to question. We can never rest in the arms of certainty, but we can look to the framework of our big tent. We can ask ourselves, are we affirming life? Are we seeking truth? Are we accepting differences? Are we making justice? In short, are we being Unitarian Universalists? I didn't have the words to say all of that when I was in high school. On that sunny summer day when I'd invited my friends to church with me, I didn't know how to talk about big tent theology or what boundaries limited our freedom to believe whatever we want. But if I could go back and perhaps take a seat on the grass with my teenage self and her friends at the picnic, I might say to them, "No, Unitarian Universalists can't believe whatever we want. But we offer the freedom and the responsibility for each person to take up their own quest, searching for truth and meaning, figuring out how to affirm life in the here and now. Sometimes it's hard, but we strive to accept one another, and we believe that when we come together, we have the power to help heal the world, bringing about peace and justice through the transforming power of love. We won't give you the answers, but we'll provide company on the journey. So come in. Just as this picnic feeds your body, so can our faith feed your soul. Maybe you'd like to join us. In Unitarian Universalism, you will find a religion steeped in tradition, with powerful histories of those who affirm life and those who seek truth, and those who teach us to accept differences, and those who are tireless in their vision of justice. Among us, you can live a life grounded within these four walls, these rolled-up canvas sides, still viewing the wider landscape for inspiration. For here you need not hide, nor pretend, nor be anything other than who you are and who you are called to be. Together, we make this a holy place. When we live with deep assurance of the faith that burns within, then our promise finds fulfillment, and our future can begin. So may it be, and amen. I'll invite you to rise in body or in